Okay. Purim. The city. Sihaya. Having given up. Upagataha. Gone out. Uparudaha. Arrested. Bhujangamaha. The serpent. Yada. When. Tam. Him. Eva. Certainly. Anu. After. Puri. The city. Vishirna. Scattered. Prakritim. Matter. Gata. Turned into. So translation. The serpent, who had already been arrested by the soldiers of Yavanaraj and was out of the city, began to follow his master along with the others. As soon as they all left the city, it was immediately dismantled and smashed to dust. We can repeat. The serpent, who had already been arrested by the soldiers of Yavanaraj and was out of the city, began to follow his master, along with the others. As soon as they all left the city, it was immediately dismantled and smashed to dust. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. When the living entity is arrested, all of his followers, namely the life bearer, the senses, and the sense objects, immediately leave the lump of matter, the body. When the living entity and his companions leave, the body no longer works but turns into basic material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. When a city attacked by enemies is vacated by its inhabitants, the enemy immediately takes advantage of that city and bombards it to smash the whole thing to dust. When we say, dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return, we refer to the body. When a city is attacked and bombarded by enemies, the citizens generally leave, and the city ceases to exist. It is a foolish person who engages in improving the condition of a city without caring for the citizens or inhabitants. Similarly, a living entity who is not properly enlightened in spiritual knowledge simply takes care of the external body, not knowing that the spirit soul is the principal factor within the body. When one is advanced in spiritual knowledge, the spirit soul is saved from eternal transmigration. The Bhagavatam considers those who are attached to their bodies to be like cows and asses. Saeva go karaha. The cow is a very innocent animal, and the ass is a beast of burden. One who labors under the bodily conception simply works like an ass and does not know his self-interest. It is therefore said, Yashatva buddhi kuna petri dat duke swati kalatra di chu boma ichati yatirtha buddhi shalelaina karhichit janeshvabhageshu saheva go karaha. A human being who identifies this body made of the three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth worshipable, and who goes to a place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath rather than meet men of knowledge, transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. It's from the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 84th chapter, text 13. Human civilization devoid of Krishna consciousness is simply a civilization of lower animals. Sometimes such a civilization may study the dead body and consider the brain or the heart. However, no part of the body is important unless the spirit soul is present. In a modern civilization of cows and asses, scientists try to search out some value in the brain or heart of a dead man. Purim vihayo pagata uparudo bhujangamaha yadattam evanu puri Vishirna prakatim gata. So Om Ganatim Randa Shah, Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Meditam, Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, in spite of this ultimate end of our dear, most material body, we're still very much attached to it. It's an illogical attachment. This whole description here of the body being smashed, and the body is compared, of course, to a city, and the inhabitants of the city also being forced out of the city, reminds me of a part of the Ramayana. When the monkeys were attacking Lanka. Of course, we understand that before Lord Ram and the monkeys attacked Lanka, Hanuman had previously set fire to Lanka. And with his tail, the tail was on fire, and he was going all around Lanka. And the fire did not burn him due to the prayers of Mother Sita Devi. But anyway, he was able to set fire to Lanka. So later on in the Ramayana, when Lord Ram, Lakshman, and the rest of the monkeys were there, they were winning over the Rakshasas, which we know. Obviously, the Lord always wins. And they decided to destroy the city. I was shocked to hear this. Basically, they climbed over the walls, Lord Ram and Sugriv. Sugriv is the commander-in-chief. He told them to climb over the walls, set fire to the city, destroy the city. So they were these monkeys. They were going around the city, just tearing everything to bits, setting fire. People were being burnt in their homes. It's almost like terrorism, I was thinking. It's really heavy. You know, war is an extremely heavy thing. So many people are killed in war. It's innocent people, too. So anyway, so they were destroying the city like that. So you would think, the reason I'm telling this story is that you would think that Ravana would, at this point, say, I surrender, I give up Sita Devi. Actually, throughout the whole story of the war, Ravana is encouraged to give up Sita Devi and end the conflagration or the destruction of his whole dynasty. I mean, Ravana has not only seen the city being destroyed, but he's seen his sons, one after the other, killed. I mean, Ravana had so many sons. Atikai, I'm not going to go through all the names, but anyway, interesting sons. Devantak, you know, the destroyer or the defeater of the Devas, and Atikai, who was, and his brother, Kumbhakarna, and Kumbhakarna's son, Kumbha. Actually, Kumbhakarna means pot ear. Doesn't mean marijuana in his ear, but it means a pot, you know, like a pot that you cook with. It means his ears look like a pot. Kumbhakarna. Like, if you say someone looks like a pot, that's an insult. Anyway, so, just like we have pot belly, right? You ever hear that expression before? Pot belly. So he was Kumbhakarna, pot ears. So Ravana was basically seeing the wholesale destruction of his entire dynasty. And, of course, he had many, many wives. Many of the wives he had been kidnapped. But after they had been kidnapped, they fell in love with him. As we mentioned before, that because they weren't specifically that chaste, they forgot their husbands when they came in touch with Ravana, because Ravana was extremely wealthy. I mean, imagine you ladies of some man who has billions of dollars kidnaps you and has expensive yachts and everything like that, like Bill Gates or something like that. You know, if Bill Gates were to kidnap any of the ladies here, then probably I wouldn't hear from them again, you know. Are you chanting rounds? No. Anyway, so I'm not saying, now, obviously, you're probably all such good devotees that even if Bill Gates kidnapped you, you'd still be all right. I hope so. Because wealth is an intoxicating factor. Janmaisharya Shutashushibir Edamana Daapuman, as Queen Kunti says. You know, having good birth and wealth, learning, opulence, all these things are very bewildering, or just being attractive physically. You know, just having some attractive body physically is a very bewildering factor. It's degrading, not just bewildering, it's degrading. So anyway, so Ravana, so getting back to the point, so Ravana had all these wives, and obviously he wasn't celibate. So he had so many children. And he loved his children. And they were quite powerful, especially like Indrajit. Indrajit was so powerful, he defeated Indra. That's why he's called Indrajit. Krishna is called Ajita. Ajita means he who is not conquered. So Indrajit means he who conquers Indra. Isn't it? So he had all these sons who were just like the pride and joy. Yet, it's described in the fire of his lust, really it was lust, that he was sacrificing everything. That shows how strong this lust is. Amazing. He was sacrificing everything. I mean, obviously his... And even he was quite a religious chap. Because he worshipped the Brahmanas. I mean, so he sacrifices religiosity. He sacrificed, you know, Rakshasa's religiosity. You're allowed to eat human beings. So he sacrificed his religiosity. He sacrificed his children. He sacrificed... the citizens, and he sacrificed his city. Everything was sacrificed in the fire of lust. And throughout the whole battle that Ravana had, or the Rakshasas had with Lord Rama and his associates, Ravana's wives were coming to him and complaining about the whole thing. Obviously, if their kids are killed, I mean, a woman's not going to just say, that's great, you know, he went to heaven. I mean, sometimes you may run into a strange Kshatriya lady who'll say that. My son. Yeah, because mothers are attached to their sons. Just like, it is like Mahabharata has a mother and she's very attached to him. She says, she contacts me by email, please help my son, do the best thing for my son, right? That's love. So imagine, so all the... all the wives of Ravana, and there were thousands of them, too. It's not just like two or three or four. I mean, when he went out, he just came back with a woman each time. So they were all crying. So there was the devastation of the women crying. That's very hard to tolerate anyway. The women crying and the citizens being killed and the city being burnt down. And his sons being killed, and all the soldiers being killed. And still, you know, he wouldn't give back Sita Devi. And his, you know, and Vibhishan, his brother, just left him, rejected him because of his irreligious activities. So it shows how strong these attachments are. Of course, ultimately, the attachment or the lust is not attachment so much for the object of your lust, but for yourself, your body. You understand? It's not that you're really attached. Let's say you fall in love. It's not that you're really attached to the other person. You're attached to what the person can do for your body. You're attached to the body, to the pleasure of the body. Because the body is constituted in such a way that it has pleasure sensors built in, just like you have electronic devices with different sensors. And so you get addicted to that. Just like there was this study when I was young, I read about this study with monkeys. They would place electrodes in the pleasure sensors of their brains. And the monkeys were given a little button. And they could push the button and, you know, it gives them a little jolt in the pleasure sensor, you know, just wow. And so because they were having so much pleasure, just see how illusory this pleasure is. Because they were having so much pleasure, they neglected to eat and all their basically bodily functions. They just kept pushing the button. Of course, the problem with stimulating the pleasure center of the brain is that you need to increase it all the time. You know, sometimes they would just push it once. In the beginning, they would push it once every half an hour. Then they had to push it twice every half an hour, once every 5 minutes. And finally, they ended up holding the button down all the time. Because the pleasure, either this material pleasure, you know, has a beginning and an end, and it actually isn't really pleasure. The material pleasure is just like, is the cessation of some imbalance. Just like that story that Prabhupada told about Gopal Bhan. Gopal Bhan, here's a famous joker, he was with the king. And the king one time asked him, "How do you feel, Gopal Bhan?" He said, "Very happy." And the king said, "Why do you feel very happy?" He said, "Because I just passed duel." You know that story? You ever hear that story? Some of you heard that story before. And the king got very angry. "Why are you talking about that to me? I'm the king. You should not talk about scatological things to me." And then he refused to talk to Gopal Bhan for a while after that. Prabhupada told the story. It's a very funny story. And so one day, Gopal Bhan and the king were in the boat. And Gopal Bhan was rowing, obviously, because the kings don't row. Anyway, they were in a boat in a lake, and the king said, "You know, I have to go to the bathroom." And Gopal Bhan just took his good old time rowing the boat. Get row, and the king was going, "Gopal Bhan, go to the shore, go to the shore." He said, "Yeah, gradually we'll go. Just be patient, my dear king." So row. And finally he got to the store, and the king like jumped out of the boat, ran into the bushes. And Gopal Bhan asked him, "How do you feel?" When he came back, he said, "Great." So that's Prabhupada told that story. Don't blame me. Some of you heard that story before, right? Yeah. I mean, I colored it a little bit. But anyway, so the story, that is the material pleasure. One gets so addicted, that's all it is. So anyway, getting back to the monkeys. So they just got addicted to it, and they neglected everything else, because that was lust. And we also see with drugs, it's like that too. You know, people take drugs, you know, whether they're cocaine or something like that, that stimulate, you know, they snort it, it stimulates, they get very high. Of course, Prabhupada said with Krishna consciousness, we stay high forever, right? You know, Prabhupada was expert in preaching to the hippies. He said, "Take up this chanting and you'll stay high forever." And so that in the 1960s and 70s, you know, people were coming to us just to chant and get high. And they would, I remember in the beginning days, people would look at each other and they'd be chanting, "Hare Krishna, have you gotten off yet?" That's a drug term that means that, you know, has your consciousness taken off into the stratosphere yet? Hare Krishna, not yet, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, yeah, I'm getting off now, Hare Krishna. So, I mean, the 1960s was quite interesting. Those of us, isn't it a verb? It was very interesting. So many interesting things. So then one gets addicted to these things. And then they destroy their lives. The point I'm making is like Ravana, his city, and children, and everything got destroyed. People get addicted to pleasure, the pleasure of the body, whether it's through drugs, whether it's whatever other means, you know, the romantic things. And you neglect your real self-interest. Your real self-interest. And in the meantime, the body's getting destroyed. That's old age. The body's getting destroyed. So that's really the point. To get attached to meditate, to focus, to contemplate the senses, the objects of the senses, that will take us away from our real self-interest, which is Krishna. Yate natevatu swartha gatim hi Vishnu durasya ye bahirartha manina anda yatanda rupaniyamanas tepi shatantram urudamni bada. That's a Bhagavatam. Natevatu swartha gatim hi Vishnu. They don't know swartha gatim. I believe this gatim is also used in this verse here. Is it gatim? Let me just... Yeah, gata, same thing. Gata can mean turned into, or going away, or going. So gatim means destination. Nate vidhu, they do not know, vidhu, that's like vidya, nate, they, vidhu. Swartha, swartha, that means their interest, their self-interest, gatim, goal, hi Vishnu, is Krishna consciousness. They're actually absorbed in the bahira, the outside, artha. In their mind, they're absorbed in this external stuff. You understand? Bahir means outside. Artha means interest. Manina, it's in the mind because of their attachment. And then, andar yatandar. This is a very interesting verse. It's like, I mean, it's an English expression. What? The blind leading the blind. Anda. They're like blind people, and they've accepted as their leaders other blind people. Andadiyatandar upaniyamanas. And then the Prabhupada translates, Pishatantramudharmanibhada. Prabhupada translates that last line as they both fall into a ditch. That's Prabhupada's translation. So, because people don't know that, they think their real self-interest is to enjoy. And then they become more attached, even though everything is falling apart. So, of course, our real self-interest is to enjoy. And that's to enjoy Kevala Nandakanda, the Vajabhajabhai, Chaitanya Nitai. To enjoy this unlimited happiness that's available in Krishna consciousness. But that happiness is not Bahirartamani now. That happiness is not external. That happiness is inside. You have to go inside for that. And that happiness is achieved, just like it's said here. It's a very interesting, the Prabhupada makes reference to this verse here. Yatirtha buddhi shalale nakarichit. The happiness is realized by the hearing process. So just like this verse states, that people who are like cows and asses, I'm paraphrasing, go to a holy place just to take a bath. And as Prabhupada said, rather than meeting men of knowledge. That's actually Prabhupada's addition to that verse, because because that's not really mentioned in that particular verse. That's like a purported translation. Janeshu Abhigeshu, those stupid people are like... Janeshu Abhigeshu, those people without any intelligence, say Eva Gokura, are like cows and asses. So those who don't take advantage of this hearing process, and even, you know, of course it's pious to go to a pilgrimage place and take a bath, I understand that. But Prabhupada makes the point that even the cows take baths in pilgrimage places. That's all right. I mean, it's better you take a bath in a pilgrimage place than don't take a bath in a pilgrimage place. That's true. But the real point of going to a pilgrimage place is to hear. Shushushro Shratanasha Vasudeva Katarujishan Mahatsevya Vipra Punya Tirthashekana. The real point is to connect with Krishna through sound vibration. You know, whatever, because that's the Yuga Dharma, that's the real point. There's a channel between the ear and the heart, Vavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Kata. As Lord Kapila Dev says, that's really what our most important activity is: hearing and chanting. Hearing and chanting, all the other activities come as a result and are supportive of that. Hearing, chanting, remembering comes as a result. Worshipping, serving, becoming the friend of Krishna, surrendering everything to Krishna comes from the hearing process. That's why I've been stressing that. So we should here, and of course, like it says, Prabhupada says, meet men of transcendental knowledge. Meet the sadhu, someone who is actually a sadhu. Not hear from someone who is a sadhu. And then you become attached to that, and then whatever is happening with the body, it's being torn to pieces, you're getting old. You know, it's not going to be so upsetting for you anymore. Not going to be so upsetting. Otherwise, I mean, just looking in the mirror is going to be traumatic. I mean, just yesterday, you know, I put on my video camera, and then I put it on me for a few minutes to see if it was working properly. And then I watched it, and I said, oh, my God. What can I do? Maybe I need to see a chiropractor. So bahirartha maninat. We should not absorb our mind in this external thing. We should be absorbed in Krishna's pastimes and the transcendental words of the pure devotee. And then we have a real life. We have a real activities going on that are not perceivable externally, but they're actually happening internally. And that's what we're supposed to get to. I mean, that's the progress of devotional service. There's the Vaidhi Bhakti, which is part of sadhana. Then after that, there's Raghunuga. And Raghunuga, you're doing the internal service. You're accepting someone, one of Krishna's Ragatmika devotees, as your eternal inspiration. And then serving under the guidance of that Ragatmika devotee internally. That's Nectar Votion talks about that. You come to that point of serving internally. Then whatever is happening outside, you know, people ask sometimes, you know, how come you're so detached from everything outside? You know, people don't like you, people criticize you. Because we've got a real life. You know, this is not the real life. I mean, our service is real, obviously, giving people Krishna consciousness. But we're not, you know, if we're getting our juice from these external things, it's just, we're gonna bound to be traumatized or have problems, you know. Like poor Paranjana is experiencing right now. So any questions or comments about these things? We've got about 4 more minutes. Yes?
I was curious because you were talking about earlier how, you know, Prabhupada answered the 60s with stay high forever.
Yeah.
And I was curious,
what would you say now?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good question. Well, the point is we have to be relevant. Relevant and not heavy. You know, obviously if I was preaching to Jewish people, I'd use guilt trips to make them Krishna conscious. No, not really. The Krishna priest gave me a stare. If looks could kill, I'd be dead already. So, you know, what's a good slogan? I mean, that was a slogan that Prabhupada used. I wonder what sort of slogan we can use now. I don't know. You have to think about it, a slogan.
Many people want to be sustainable. And,
you know, yeah. Sustainable, yeah. Well, a slogan that relates to our philosophy, more or less. You know, a slogan, because, you know, or the chanting. Chanting to connect to your real self. You know, chanting. I don't know. You have to think about it. We should think about slogans. I mean, that slogan was really useful in the 1960s. If you use it now, people are not going to relate to it. You know, stay high forever. It would be a negative right now. So you have to change your methods of presentation according to time, place, and circumstance. I mean, we have to be very sensitive as to what people are looking for. And especially when we put things out on the internet, you know, for the general public, you know, sometimes we put out internal things. Like there was one devotee who told me the other day, he's very happy he has this website called Bhakti. But I was thinking, nobody knows what Bhakti means. I mean, later on maybe it'll become famous. But other websites like reincarnation.com, I'm sure that's real popular. Or, you know, where did I come from.com. things like that. You know, so you have to really market Krishna consciousness. We're in the business of marketing. Preaching is marketing. And Prabhupada was an expert marketer. In a sense, that's... I mean, he was a pure devotee, but he also knew how to market things. That Krishna, it was interesting, Krishna arranged his business expertise. Prabhupada, before he took sannyas, he was marketing this thing called Day's Elixir, which is supposed to be the cure-all for everything, but it was simply... it's simply purified water. You know, so Prabhupada was marketing. He understood how to market things. And so he used that marketing expertise in presenting Krishna. And his purity, obviously, that's the most important thing. But Prabhupada understood that. So we should be intelligent in the same way. So any, there was another question? Someone else had a question? Perfect. I mentioned I looked at the image on the video camera and it wasn't so, didn't make me extremely happy. I'm sorry, the old body. Not the camera itself. You know, the camera was nice. Until it gets old. I mean, just like all of you have experience with the planned obsolescence that's built into your computers. I mean, how every few years or every 2 years or whatever, I was just speaking to someone about a computer I had, you know, just two computers just burnt out. And I was asking, you know, IBMs or Lenovo's, as they call them nowadays, and I was asking, you know, how's this happening? And they said, well, then when they source, that means when they look for the parts of the computer, they put in the cheapest parts. And anyway, so everything is just temporary. I mean, your computers, your body, everything. So, any other questions? Yes.
So, we know that we need to, you know, develop our internal life, and then at the same time, if we're going to be attracting people to Krishna consciousness, the external environment and atmosphere needs to be something that's attractive. So how can we develop relationships that aren't based on the body, that are really based on love and trust and helping each other spiritually and have a really caring society? Because basically that's what most people in the world are looking for nowadays. That's why many people go to different churches or different groups.
Well, actually, the best way we can be caring and loving towards others is to be selfless. And as long as if we have this internal life, we're more likely to be selfless than if we're absorbed externally. So that's the first step. And of course, you know, adjust and adapt things according to people's needs in presenting Krishna consciousness. I mean, it takes a lot of brain power. I haven't figured it out completely either, as you see. You know, I need to come up with a good slogan. You know, instead of stay high forever, I have no ideas. Maybe we can brainstorm sometime, come up with some good slogans. Because people function on the basis of slogans, isn't it? Tippy Canoe and Tyler too. I mean, that's when I was young, they had that one. You remember? No. That's good. Or two cars in every garage. You remember that one? No, you don't remember that one. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.